Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. Can I begin by saying thank you for your support over the last few months? The download figures are through the roof. And I'm also doing some big shows, some big gigs in the next month. I know many of you are around the world, but those of you a bit closer to home, I'm playing at the Avoca Beach Picture Theatre on the central coast of New South Wales on Friday, November 15th. Then I'm playing at Club York for all my Sydney listeners. It's a great club in York Street in the CBD, easy to get to, only about a 5-minute walk from Town Hall and Wynyard Station. It's going to be a great night, a beautiful venue in the heart of the city. So that's Friday, November 22nd. And a week later, I'm at the Vanguard in Newtown playing with the country singer Jade Holland. So that's Friday, November 29th. All the details via danmullinsmusic.com. That's danmullinsmusic.com. Come and say hello. I'd love to meet you. This is a weekly discussion about the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James. The Camino is a series of pilgrimages across Europe. The most popular and busy is the Camino Francés, a path from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port on the French side of the Pyrenees via Pamplona, Logroño, Burgos and León to Santiago de Compostela, where, we're told, the remains of Christ's apostle St. James are interred. Hundreds of thousands of pilgrims walk the path each year. Most are hoping to experience the Camino's famous energy, its ability to inspire us mystically and spiritually. And I remember walking from Lourdes in France to Santiago back in 2017. Part of my journey took me to the cathedral in the French town of Oloron-Saint-Marie. If you ever get the chance, stay in the town-run gîte. It is magic. Staffed by locals who were just so beautiful and welcoming. It was actually one of the highlights of my entire Camino. Well, I was very sad to read this week that a group of thieves tied a tree stump to their car to smash down the old wooden door at the side of the church just this week. They took a whole shelf full of ancient artifacts, religious relics, and in some cases 1,000 years old or more. Seeing the footage of the broken door and the smashed glass on the marble floor really saddened me. We see priceless relics all the way along the Camino in France and Spain and Italy and Portugal. So it's awful to think that somewhere I've been and somewhere I've loved being was desecrated and looted. The Camino is all about love, happiness and the simple joys of life. And what happened at Oloron-Saint-Marie this week seems to me the very anathema of what it means to be the pilgrim on a pilgrimage. It hurt to watch the footage, to be honest. Well, my quote this week is attributed to Zoe Saywood, whom I could find very little about, to be honest. But I think it applies to all of us wishing and waiting to go back to the Camino, and those of you who are listening, thinking about undertaking a pilgrimage. Don't wait for the perfect moment. Take the moment and make it perfect. My guest this week is Tom Labuszynski, a pilgrim from South Bend in the U.S. state of Indiana. He's on the line. Welcome, Tom.
Welcome. Good day and buen Camino.
Yeah, buen Camino to you too. Before we start talking all things Camino, tell us about life in South Bend, Indiana.
Well, South Bend's in the middle of the United States, really, and it's not in the northern part of or the southern part of Indiana. It's in the northern part of Indiana, curiously enough. It's the south bend of the St. Joseph River, and that's how it got its name. And many people around the world may not know, but people from the United States know that South Bend is the home of the University of Notre Dame, a major Catholic university in the United States. They're known for a lot of things. Probably a lot of people know them for their football teams for the past 100 years or so.
Yeah, I've actually heard about Notre Dame and the football program. There you go. So it's a lot more famous than you think. So that's where the university is. Would you call it a university town?
Coming from South Bend, I would say no. It's not a college town. It's the university happens to be here in South Bend, and they're a pretty good citizen of South Bend.
Yeah. You teach a Camino course in your local community. Tell us about the course.
Right. And I just, you know, the idea that to share this idea with everybody that's listening to your podcast is that to think of how we could spread the word of how great and inspiring the Camino is if people went out and taught courses about the Camino in their own communities. I think that it would be so inspiring to share that. You know, Dan, you probably, when you got back from the Camino during the first few weeks, you talked to all of your friends and your family, and you told them, they said, well, how did you like the Camino? And you tell them, and after about 2 minutes, they sort of glaze over, and you know the conversation's about over with, right?
It's so true.
And so after doing that for a few weeks, I actually was sitting in church thinking, okay, this is just such an awe-inspiring event. What am I going to do with all of this information? I need to share it with people. I just can't keep it inside anymore. And so I came up with the idea to have a class. And I happened to know some people that have a program called Forever Learning here in South Bend. And there's similar programs, not only around the United States, but I'm sure around the world, where older adults go for continuing education. And so at this Forever Learning, they teach 100 different classes, and we all do it for free. And we have over 1,000 students that take, you know, one of these 100 courses. And so for the past 3.5 years or so, I've taught a program. It's a 10-week course, and it's an hour and a half each week. And we go over everything about the Camino, its history, how to pack for the Camino, how to train. This past semester, I've had many students that have graduated from my program, and they've been out on the Camino live, and they call back via video phone, and we have them talk to the class, and so the class members can see people just like themselves that were students here just a few months or years ago, and they're there doing the Camino live. And it's a lot of fun. Then they come into the class, and then they share their experiences as well. And it's amazing the people that want to come in and share their stories. And we just had a couple of weeks ago an 80-year-old lady that did her seventh Camino. She wanted to celebrate her 80th birthday with five ladies that have did the Camino with her that were also turning 80. And it's just so much fun to share this experience and then to see people get so excited about doing it. They go off and do their own Camino.
Yeah, I love it, because my next question was about the people calling in live from Spain or any of the other Caminos indeed. And I thought what a great idea it was. And they must be so excited to share what they are going through, knowing that the people back in South Bend would be so excited to hear from them.
Right. And then they're also excited to come back home and then share that story with them. When they're on the road, you know, we can see that they may look a little tired.
Yeah.
At 9 o'clock in the morning back here in South Bend, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon there. So many times they're just getting into their albergues. They're just taking a rest at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can tell they look a little tired, perhaps, but they also look full of energy from just being out there and being on the Camino, being very happy.
You have walked and ridden a bike on the Camino. How do the two
exactly?
How do the two compare?
Well, first of all, I got to tell you that I think that we may have crossed paths, really. And you went in August 16?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you? Give me a date and a town, and I'm wondering if we crossed paths.
Well, I started in Sahuin.
Right, but I'm thinking we might have passed each other August the 9th through the 15th. Where were you those days?
I was, well, from the 9th to the 15th, I think Astoria to Santiago. I arrived in Santiago on the 16th.
Okay, and we did pass each other. This is great.
There you are.
So what we did was, I should go back because You always ask the question, Dan. You say, well, you know, what got you interested in the Camino?
Sure.
But you haven't asked that yet. So
I was going to I'll get to it.
I know. But so this comes into it so I at Notre Dame, they had Martin Sheen come and give a talk and show the movie The Way when it first came out. And so then I got the movie and showed it to my family, and my two oldest sons said, Dad, when are we doing this? And so my two oldest sons and I, we did the Camino. We had about a month. We didn't have enough time to hike the entire 800 kilometers from Saint-Jean, but we wanted to start in Saint-Jean. So what we did was we hiked, for the most part, all the way to Astorga, and then we got on bicycles in Astorga. So it was a little bit of hiking, a little bit of biking, and we were able to see, you know, what we liked out of each of those ways of doing the Camino. And so we passed each other in those last few days, because we got to Santiago the morning of Sunday, August the 14th. And so I am positive that you were walking and we biked right past you and we said Buen Camino to you.
Well, there you go. How fantastic.
So probably in those last few days, there are these three guys from America, from South Bend, that went right past Dan Mullins.
That's
but
so
we didn't
great.
Hear you playing your guitar. I bet if we even figured it out later, we might have even stayed somewhere close to each other on those last few days. I just thought that was a great coincidence to be there. And it was beautiful weather, wasn't it?
It was absolutely stunning. It was gorgeous. Yeah. Really, really beautiful. Let me ask you something then. If you had, if you walked and then you biked, you know the inevitable question here. Did you sense the tension between the bikers and the walkers?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, being one of both, what do you put it down to?
Well, I think the bikers, I felt as a biker that I wanted to be respectful of a hiker because I had just been doing that for several weeks before we hopped on the two-wheel vehicles. So I wanted to be very respectful. We didn't want to be ringing bells or honking horns. We just said, Buen Camino, and we approached people slowly. And we wore regular clothes, and you probably saw some bikers go past you that looked like they were in the Tour de France.
Yeah.
And, you know, dressed up in those fancy uniforms and everything.
Yeah, we call them mammals.
Yeah.
Middle-aged men in Lycra.
So that was not us. My son said, we're not doing that. We're dressing in regular clothes, and we're going to be very respectful. And so we tried to go around everybody slowly since we were just hiking. And I know that when we were hiking, when people would come a little bit too close to us going too fast, I felt that was a little bit of an annoyance. And it broke your concentration as you're hiking and trying to appreciate everything. So yeah. I will say this, that I probably will not bike it again, just because you don't have time to talk to other people. It sort of separates you from the walkers. And so, I like that community. It's all about the people, as you know, Dan, I think you get into that much more if you are hiking instead of biking. But that's just me. But, you know, my one son, he loved biking down from, if you can remember, from the Cruz de Ferro.
Yeah.
And down to Molin Seca. We took the road, which is a very narrow, two-lane, bumpy road, no guardrails, lots of switchbacks, and we were going 60, 70 miles an hour down the mountain. And my one son just loved that. But going uphill, it's not so much fun, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's a lot better ride by the sound of it than it is a walk, because it's a pretty ghastly walk. But do most cyclists consider themselves as pilgrims?
See, that's the thing. You don't get to talk to many other cyclists. We didn't get a chance. They were just biking past us.
Yeah.
And by the time we checked into the, you know, wherever we were staying that night, they were out of their biking clothes and they looked like regular. So we really didn't hang. We didn't hang out with the Camino bikers, let's say.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And,
that's interesting.
And the, so it, you don't have that community that you have as a walker.
Yeah. You also hiked the Kumano Kodo in Japan to become a dual pilgrim. Tell us about that pilgrimage.
You know that that's just north of you guys.
Yeah.
And so my youngest son, who missed out on the Camino, we wanted to do an adventure last summer. And what we did was we did the Kumano Kodo in Japan. And then we came down to your area and we came to Sydney and we went and hiked the Blue Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
And along some of your shoreline there, that's just beautiful. And then we hopped over to the island there of New Zealand, your easterly neighbors there, and just found that to be a fun trip. The Kumano Kodo, though, is very different from the Camino, and you can become a dual pilgrim. They're the only two official UNESCO World hiking sites in the world. And the last I checked, there's only about 1,200 or 1,300 people in the entire world that have ever done both and become dual pilgrims. So you have to take your Compostela or your credential that proves you did the Camino, take it with you on the Kumano Kodo. And it's a very different experience. There are fewer people, fewer places to stay. It's a shorter hike. It's a little bit more rigorous because they don't believe in, if they have a mountain to climb, they go straight up it. They don't believe in going back and forth, a zigzag path to make it easier. They just go for that mountain. And when you know all the temples and everything, you're at the top of the mountains. But it's a very different experience. And most nights we had people from, you know, all six continents there. Hiking with us, and we saw them quite often because there aren't that many pilgrims. But it is a different type of an experience than the Camino.
How far do you walk in total?
You can do it to get their credential in probably 4 or 5 days only.
Oh, okay.
And they've got these little huts along the way that you stamp your credential yourself. And a lot of woods and not many big villages. You stay, you know, and you can stay in people's homes. But you have to really book it ahead of time because there aren't many places to choose from. And there's a couple of good websites that help you make those reservations. And because it is so limited, you have to really do it a ways in advance.
And just one last question. It's not the 88 Temples Walk, is it?
The Temples Walk?
Yeah.
You see shrines and temples, and if you do get the dual pilgrim, the priest will take you into the temple, and you get to bang the drum in the ceremony, and they make a special thing about that, and you get a special certificate and pin picture up on the website. Your mouth, supposedly. And one nice thing, Dan, is that each evening, you can take a nice hot bath in natural hot spring water.
Oh, wow.
And many places along the way have that. And the Japanese are quite particular the way you do that. You know, you have to take your shower before the bath in a certain way. And there's a lot of culture to be learned when you go over to Japan to be respectful and to blend in.
Yeah, yeah. There is a walk in Japan that is called the 88 Temples Walk. And I'm pretty sure it takes like a month. It takes like a month. And you visit 88 temples. Yeah. Yes, but that's not the Kumano Kodo.
And that's no. It's not. It's that is a different one. But that doesn't get you the dual pilgrim.
Right,
of course. But it is a beautiful walk.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There is that way of doing it. And again, there's lots of mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not much flat land there in the middle of Japan.
They're all on my bucket list, I can tell you. The course you teach touches on, and I'm quoting you here, the total Camino pilgrimage experience. How do you describe the total Camino pilgrimage experience?
I've got a list of like about 50 gifts that I got from the Camino. And when I say gifts, it's the benefits of going, everything from, you know, gratitude to the awareness, the letting go of control, living in the moment, those sorts of things you share the idea of you get these things, you receive these gifts by doing the Camino. And there's not many places in the world you can go to receive all of those gifts that are that you get on the Camino. I think there's some real strong benefits to walking across the path there of St. James.
Yeah. You're also a board member of the American Pilgrims on the Camino. And I've said here many times that Australians and Americans are incredibly fortunate. And I think it's one of the reasons we perhaps seek a simpler life, a pilgrim's life. Would you agree with that?
That's the way to do it. You know, you can, there's so many people we see that take tours and so forth and make it complicated. But, you know, Dan, don't you agree that hiking on the Camino, it is so simple. You put one foot in front of the other. You don't need a reservation. You just follow the arrows. And where else in the world can you do that? It gets you out of the routine, and it makes you so much more aware of your life and your surroundings and the people you're with.
Yeah, and that's right. And the explanatory notes for the course say that you teach and will discuss the how, where, when, who, and why of the pilgrimage. So take us through the why.
So, okay, I just went and did the Camino again a couple of months ago. And I wasn't planning on doing it. I saw this cheap airfare from Chicago to Barcelona and thought, okay, even if I do this, if I only have a week vacation left this year, I could still do this. So without much planning, I just took off for Barcelona, took a train to Pamplona, and then the bus to Saint Jean, and I'm there. And the first night in Orison, you've been there.
Yeah.
I took out this little 1-inch square video camera, and I went to folks having dinner that night in the middle of nowhere, you know, up in the Pyrenees in Orison. And I just asked each individual there, and there were about 40 or 50. I says, why are you saying why they do this? So they're doing it for a bonding experience, recovering addicts that are doing it to help kick that habit. People looking, they don't know what they're going to do in life. People recovering from either divorce, the death of a loved one. Maybe somebody was laid off from a job. People are retiring. It's a career change. They're doing it for so many different reasons. And so the why, I explore that. And then I have to tell you, Dan, and you might want to take your microphone with you the next time that you go on the Camino.
Yeah.
Because then after I did these interviews, each night, people are saying, oh, there's Tom. How's that video coming along? And so I would get updated interviews. So how's the Camino going for you? And so, I should tell you of one experience. I'm walking through the Pyrenees, just at almost the very top of going from Orison to Roncesvalles, and up there. It was a cloudy day. The first time I went with my sons, it was just a beautiful sunny day. But both are just beautiful in and of themselves. But so going on the cloudy day this last time, I'm in this cloud, and all you could hear is the wind at the top of the Pyrenees, and cloud in front of me, behind me. Nothing else was visible other than the ground right below me. And I thought, this is what heaven must be like. And so I felt compelled to pray. And so I started praying, and I was praying out loud. And this was the first time I had done that on this Camino. And then a man comes from behind me from out of the cloud. And he looks at me and he smiles and he says, hello. And I said, hello, my name is Tom. What's yours? And he says, Jesus. And I looked at him and he had this long black beard and long black hair. He was from Spain. And he really did look like Jesus. And we smiled and we talked. That one of the nicest guys, this guy happened to be probably in his young 30s. And then he says, well, I'm going to walk on. You have a blessed Camino. And he walked on. And I said, goodbye, Jesus. And he said, goodbye. Peace be with you. He walked off into the cloud.
So we were talking about the course and the who and when and why. What about the day-to-day walking? How do you tell people or teach people to prepare for the long walk?
You know, they say that the average pilgrim is overpacked and underprepared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough thing because and no matter how hard you try to tell somebody to not overpack, they do. It's tough to let go of you know, things you use on a daily basis and things you think you're going to need. But all you really need is, you know, two shirts, two pairs of pants, underwear, you know, your socks. You know, there's not much more. And so we go through the pack and I show people what kinds of things to pack for. But with preparing, each person is you know, to prepare on their own. I do know some hiking groups that go different places that mm-hmm. they try to hike together, but we haven't done much of that to hike together. So everybody's on their own, but I encourage them to do several days back home like they're going to do on the Camino. So if you're planning on hiking 20 miles a day, you should be able to hike 20 miles a day in successive days back home before you leave. And so that's probably the important. My wife happens to be an exercise physiologist, and she warns people not to increase their mileage more than 10% in any week. So if you're wanting to get to 20 miles, you know, it could take you 20 weeks to get there if you want to do it very carefully and successfully. So, and then it's difficult to train for mountains in Indiana. We don't have like you could go off to the Blue Mountains over there. We're very flat here in Indiana. We'd have to go to Lake Michigan and hike the dunes or go to a tall building and hike steps almost to try to get in shape to do elevation.
Right, that's interesting.
But we do have to, you know, encourage people to do it. And still, with all of that, everybody does do a little complaining. You know, I should have listened to you, and I should have gotten in better shape before I left. So,
yeah,
a word to everyone doing that.
And good for wearing in your shoes too.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, wear your shoes at least a couple of months before, so you know those shoes are going to work out. I should tell you, I also even have a podiatrist come in and talk about suggestions for shoes and for socks and to put in, you know, maybe liners under your socks and things like that.
Yeah, well, that's the foot care is one of the most critical things, because so often you walk past someone and you think they're having a really awful time because they haven't taken good enough care of their feet.
right? And everybody has their own prescription for what's going to help prevent blisters, don't they?
Yeah.
It seems like the majority, though, say that liners, hiking liners, are good. So you've got two layers. If you start feeling any heat or pain, you immediately stop and maybe switch socks and liners and reposition, or you tape that hot spot before it becomes a problem.
You also focus in your course, Tom, about the Spanish history, the culture, the art, the nature, food, and wine. They're a big part of the allure of the Camino, too, aren't they?
Oh, isn't, you know, where else in the world are you going to get that, you know, that, you know, people have been hiking this really before Christ, as we know now. The architecture, the food, as you know, it changes from region to region, from village to village. And it's such a culinary adventure and cultural adventure, and the churches it's the scenery. I mean, one day you could be walking in over mountains. The next day you're walking through a forest. The next day you're walking through the Masada and through big cities like Lyon or Logroño, or, you know, it's just amazing the variety that you've got. So to prepare people for that is also good.
Yeah,
and also the history of St. James, who St. James was, a lot of people don't, you know, this isn't Dan's hike. It is St. James' pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And that's what can really make it special. You know, the St. James was Jesus's cousin.
Right.
So they were very close that makes it a very special walk.
Yeah, I love the thought of walking in his footsteps. It's a lovely way to look at it, I think. You know, I read somewhere in your bio, you're a local coordinator for foreign high school students and host families. And we're enriched by mixing with people from other cultures and other countries, aren't we, Tom?
Oh, aren't we, though? You know, in college, I spent a year in Rome living, and I guess maybe the Camino brings that back to life for me, because when I was in college living in Rome, we traveled around Europe and even traveled through Spain. And I'm so old that, you know, Franco was the king of Spain when I went to Spain, and it was quite a different country at that time.
Yeah.
And seeing the cultures and traveling as a young student around Europe with a backpack and staying in the book, the Bible back then, Dan, was called Europe on $5 a day. And so you can see why I appreciate the Camino.
Yeah.
It takes me back to those days where you travel, it's simple. And you get to meet people from all over the world. I just think it's the greatest thing that you can do in this life.
You teach your students that you can do the Camino walking adventure on your own, at your own speed and budget, and for your own reasons. But what, Tom, can we learn about ourselves by undertaking a pilgrimage?
You know, it gives us time to think. We get out of the routine, and the routine sort of numbs our awareness, doesn't it, Dan?
Mm.
You know, it is when we get out of that routine, we wake up and we go outside and take those first few steps, and that cold air hits us in the face. That helps us wake up, not only physically, but mentally, I think. It makes us more keenly aware of the environment around us, the people around us. By talking to other people, I think we not only learn about them, but we learn about ourselves, because they're also interested in us. And then we tell them about ourselves and some of our deep thoughts. And that helps bring them to the surface, doesn't it? And so I think that does have a powerful benefit to hiking this pilgrimage across the the northern part of Spain. And there's so many pilgrimages to do, you know, just doing that. And that's one of the things that the American pilgrims on the Camino are trying to let people know about, is all these other paths that you can take in these different routes. You don't have to stay on the Francis route, as you know, when you started in Lourdes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I just happened to have 6 weeks, so I knew that I could walk from Saint-Jean in 4 weeks, or just about 4 weeks. So I just thought, well, I'll just add another couple of weeks on. So I was really lucky, right, to be able to do that, the extended Camino in a way.
And I hear you're presenting to the American Pilgrims in March in Lake Tahoe.
I will be there. I will be there, and I'll be singing singing some songs for you too. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic.
We'll get to meet each other there. And I should say that, you know, anybody from all over the world can join the American Pilgrims, because you do get a discount for the national gathering if you are a member. You can tell that I'm the person on the board that's in charge of membership, right? But if you do become a member, then you get an invitation. You're one of the first ones to know when you can sign up. And we do believe, because this location at Zephyr Point in Lake Tahoe is going to be, it's a little bit smaller, but oh, is it a beautiful location. We went there just recently to check the place out. And it's gorgeous and just brilliant place. And we think that it's going to sell out in a day. Once when the email goes out, the reservations for some 200 to 300 people are going to go within a few hours. So if you're a member, you'll get to hear about this first. And we'll have great people like yourself, authors, movie producers. And it'll be all things Camino for 4 days there in Lake Tahoe.
I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. It's a long way from home, but it just sounds like a wonderful adventure. What are you telling potential pilgrims to expect on the Camino in 2020 and 2021, Tom?
I'm asking them if they want to be on, you know, with a lot of people.
Yeah.
In 2021, when the Feast of St. James falls on a Sunday, it becomes then a holy year and a plenary indulgence for those that want to take advantage of that. So they're saying three times the number of people. There's 350,000 plus that have done the Camino in 2019. They're expecting over 1 million, so three times that number of people, based on previous statistics, to do it during the whole year. And if you're going to do the route from Sarria to Santiago, you'd have to have reservations and be prepared to share the path with a lot of people. Now, there are those less traveled pilgrimages, perhaps the Portuguese, the Camino Norte, Ingles, the Primitivo, those are just a few, but you can take those different routes to get to Santiago. There may be fewer people there, but it might be within, once when you get in striking distance of Santiago, 100 kilometers or more, you'll want to make your reservations very well in advance. If you want to be around people, that might be the year to go, but plan it carefully so that you don't become disappointed, because that is a lot of people. In fact, last year we had some people from Spain that came and talked about the Holy Year, and I believe we might even have somebody else coming from Spain this year, Dan, so you're going to get to hear that firsthand about the preparations for the Holy Year as well.
Yeah, the number of people doesn't frighten me so much as sort of not really having that space and time that we talk about.
Right. It's not going to be like the normal Camino, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
Three times the people wanting to, you know, go into the Basilica. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people have found it very disappointing that this year the Basilica inside was filled with scaffolding and restoration, and you weren't able to see the Botta Fumera swing back and forth. We don't want people to be disappointed. that it's not going to be the ideal Camino that they had in mind. So I suggest that, you know, if you want more of a peaceful Camino, take a Camino route that's not as well traveled.
Yeah.
That might be a best way to do that.
Do you have a favorite place on the Camino Frances?
Oh, Dan, there's so many, you know. I think being at the top of the Pyrenees between Orison and Roncesvalles is very, very special up there. That's where I met Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
On a beautiful day, you can look out for miles there, and it is just, that's just breathtaking. You feel like you're up there with God almost, you know. It's amazing. Or being up on the mountain of Pardon outside of Pamplona or Oserebro, or leaving your rock off there at the Cruz de Ferro, or going to Finisterre. That's a special location too. So there's many locations. It's wherever the people of the Camino are, I think, is special, because the people make it the pilgrimage.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Tell us a Camino story.
Oh, boy. I've got so many. But so one day we're hiking near Los Arcos, and my oldest son, his knee was really bothering him. And so he says, "Dad, I just can't hike anymore. I'm sorry, but I just can't do this. What are we going to do?" And my youngest son says, "Well, we could get a bus." And he gets on his phone and he looks when the next bus is going to be coming, the next village, and he gets it all planned out. And we get my oldest son on a bus and we say, "Okay, go to the Magica in not Los Arcos, but another town. The Magica is a sort of a magical hostel."
Right.
And it's I think just before Estelle. And and so my other son and I hiked as he goes on a bus, and we're worried, you know, will he be able to walk to the hostel? Will he get lost? Will the bus drop him off at the right place? You know, is he going to be able to complete that? We're just so worried about Andrew. And after about 4 or 5 hours of hiking, we finally get there, and Andrew is laying with his feet in this like swimming pool. And he's got this beautiful Irish lady sitting next to him, giving him a back rub, and they're drinking wine, and they're just having the best of time. And he's playing his guitar, and it was like idyllic for him. And we were so worried about him, you know. And it's sort of letting go, and the Camino will provide for you. And then that lovely Irish lady hiked with us for days, and was just such an addition to our company. And Andrew got healed, mm-hmm. and everything was fine. So when you think things are going to go bad, the Camino provides. And there were so many angels along the way too, that I could just say that. There's one where there was a bad Jose and a good Jose in Saint Jean. We had a reservation because we thought, you know, we're getting in there late. And this Jose answers the door and he says, "No, no reservation, mm-hmm. full out." And so here it is, midnight in Saint Jean. We had no place to stay. And so we called him the bad Jose, and we ran into a French couple. And we asked them, you know, "Where can we stay? Is the tourist office open? You know, what do we do?" And they went to people's, the different bars and stuff, and asked people in French where we could stay. And they found us a place. And this woman came from out of this village down to Saint Jean and opened up this private club. And so we got a place to stay there. And they bought us a drink, this French couple, to celebrate. And we were tired because we just came over from the United States, and we were going to start our Camino the next day in Saint Jean. And so then the French couple bought us drinks, and my oldest son, he says, well, I'm going to stay down here and have another drink with them. And they were up until about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I could hear them singing French songs. And my son doesn't know any French, but he was somehow communicating with them, singing songs. He got out his ukulele. Dan, if you were there, you would have brought out your guitar. And they sang until the wee hours and became great friends. And then in Sarria, we couldn't find a place because they gave away our Camino. We knocked on a door, and this guy named Jose called like 20 places and found us somebody's house to stay in. And the good Jose took us to these friendliest people around Sarria there and got us a place. So the bad Jose, the good Jose, when you think things are going to be bad and your plan doesn't go according to the way you really want it to, don't worry, it's going to turn out better. You're going to have a much better time just letting go and letting the Camino provide.
That's great, Tom. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I've really, really enjoyed it. And I'm going to put a link to your course in the podcast notes. So if anyone's listening in or around South Bend, they might sign up. So good luck and thanks for sharing your story, your enthusiasm and your scholarship.
And I look forward to meeting you in March at the American Pilgrims of the Camino gathering in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Buen Camino, my friend.
Buen Camino.
My guest this week, the American pilgrim Tom Labuszynski, a pilgrim from South Bend in the U.S. state of Indiana. I'll put a link to Tom's course in the podcast notes. My quote this week is attributed to Zoe Saywood, whom I could find very little about. I think it applies to all of us wishing and waiting to go back to the Camino, and indeed those of you who are listening thinking about undertaking a pilgrimage. Don't wait for the perfect moment. Take the moment and make it perfect. I hope you find what you're looking for somewhere along the way. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.
Somewhere along the way, somewhere